goes on. We are into the meat. We're in the meat of the lineup, the heart of the order, and an exciting one today. We have an exciting one today because, you know, one of the criticisms of the Blue Jays offseason this offseason was not a lot of new faces, not a lot of new additions. In doing the 40 for 30, there has been a lot of me going back over my last year's notes and comparing how I felt about a lot of these guys and maybe some evolution in some way that I think about baseball and think about contribution. There are very few net new pieces. We talked about Yariel Rodriguez is a net new piece, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is sort of a net new piece in the way that he is replacing the Whit Merrifield expectations. Today, I think we have probably the biggest impact net new piece on the roster in terms of likely contribution. We're talking about Justin Turner today, and I am thrilled to welcome today's guest to the podcast. Somebody that has just been... I want to be clear that a lot of the time when I was given the opportunity to do things like go to the stadium and mill around on the field and watch batting practice, I often felt like I was imposter syndrome, maybe not the right word, but like everyone knew that I wasn't there to do anything and that I was sort of just a lucky guy that got let in behind the ropes. Today, I am so thrilled to welcome one of the people that was always so kind and always went out of their way to make sure that I felt like part of the crew that was supposed to be there and always had time to talk baseball. And then we move it into being in the same office when we were both in the Sportsnet office is always somebody with a kind word and a smile and some ball talk. And you learn very quickly in the Canadian media industry to filter out who is actually able to talk ball and who is just sort of a summer flinger who is just sort of in there because baseball is the one that's on right now. And the real heads, the real ball knowers, I am welcoming in somebody that you probably know quite well. It's Rob Wong. Rob, thank you for joining me today, man.
No problem, man. Incredibly kind words from you on your end. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned those days of the ballpark where you were feeling the imposter syndrome. And I mean, I kind of felt similar, right? When I first started, I'm down there at the park and, you know, you're seeing all these faces that you've read over the years or you've heard or you've seen on TV and you're thinking like, gosh, like 3 years ago, I was sitting in the stands, like watching these teams play in front of 12,000 fans, and I was one of them. And here I am on the ballpark talking shop with, you know, a Mike Wilner, or, you know, you look down the line and it's like, oh my God, there's a Richard Griffin or a John Lott, or like, I mean, all of these people that have been around the team for so long, for so many years that, you know, covered them and just been a big part of, you know, my life, just being a Blue Jays fan and covering this team. So, you know, I could relate to what you were saying back in those days, and obviously to seeing where you've come from and where you've gotten to at this point, like it's pretty wild. Had you told me back, gosh, what it would have been now, like 6-7 years ago, like, yes, hey, we'd be sitting here in 2024 talking ball still, you know, talking about Justin Turner of all people. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. So true. It went by in a flash. I remember very vividly the 2016 wildcard walk-off, you and I waiting to get into that media room. I remember that very vividly as like a real, I think the last like Jays assignment that I had at Sportsnet before moving on and failing at some stuff and then ending up at Yahoo Sports a few years later. That's something for another day. Let's talk a little bit about Justin Turner. We'll get into the details. We'll get into the performance. We'll get into the projections in a minute. I just want to ask you, I've asked everybody that's come on so far. I gave you basically an open-ended list of players on the roster to pick from. I know there were a couple you were thinking of. What is it that made you arrive at thinking Justin Turner was somebody interesting to talk about for half an hour?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what you laid out earlier, that you look at the new additions to this team, and, you know, Yariel Rodriguez is a very intriguing piece. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, obviously a lot of people are torn on what he's going to provide this year. And Justin Turner is the one I think most people feel the most optimistic about. Maybe at first there was some trepidation that, okay, he's not Jorge Soler, he's not JD Martinez, he's not Cody Bellinger. He's, you know, still an impactful bat, but he wasn't what a lot of people were expecting. He was sort of the worst, not the worst case scenario, but it was like, well, if we miss out on some of those other guys, then we guess you could always go to a Justin Turner and, you know, hope he fills in that Brandon Belt role. But, you know, I think the more that we've gone on here over the last month and a bit, and we've seen a little bit of spring training and, you know, we've seen some of the at-bats, I mean, it's hard not to feel a little bit optimistic about what he could provide for this team. So to me, I think there was just a lot of intrigue when it comes to this guy. And he's got such an incredible track record. It feels like nobody around the game has a bad thing to say about this guy. And the impact that he can have on and off the field could potentially be really big. And we'll get into a lot of that today. But I think it was just a case of, okay, he's a shiny new toy, but he's a toy that's been around for a long time. And I think we have a pretty good idea of what he has been and what he can be. But at the same time, you know, he's 39 years old. There might be some risk here. So I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, he strikes me personally as a guy that I always saw and was like, I kind of wish we had a guy like that, right? You sort of watch him and you're like, he just, it's not always quantifiable. And sometimes it's, Maybe you're projecting, but sometimes I always like to say just because it's unquantifiable doesn't mean it's not real. He is the sort of a guy that and you know, the sort of a tired cliche that winning seems to follow this guy around and the you'd call the do the right things sort of thing. But they are in an interesting spot in the development curve, in the window, if you want to use that parlance, of the guys they're bringing in. You mentioned Belt last year. You mentioned IKF. You talk about Kevin Kiermaier that has been brought in here. He is a guy that is, you know, we're not complimenting the Vladdy and Bo window with 27, 28 year olds. We're going and getting a guy that wants to win right now. And the clock is a little shorter. And you did mention 39 years old. Justin Turner played DH, third base, first base last year. I said third base ahead of the time, barely played third base, actually played second, just as much as he played third. 39 years old. I am a little appreciative. They signed one of the handful of guys in the league older than me. That makes me feel good. 1 year, $13 million, signed it in January. Not that the $13 million is prohibitive in any way, but we've seen a bit this year. It's almost been like there isn't one big contract that has crippled them, but $6 million here, $13 million there, $6.5 million, sell it $7 million for IKF. What do you think of the decision to be in the Justin Turner business versus, I mean, Soler, Bellinger, there was a couple of guys in that a little bit higher tier that they thought maybe they'd be splashed twice the money on. What do you think of the 1 year 13 opportunity for Justin Turner?
Yeah, I think when you looked at the free agent crop post Ohtani, I think it was pretty clear that their options were limited. And I don't think they ever felt like they wanted to get into the Cody Bellinger sweepstakes. I mean, that's quite a large commitment for a guy that also has a lot of question marks. You know, JD Martinez, strictly a DH, and Justin Turner is going to play a lot of DH as well. But for Martinez, he essentially doesn't need a glove. Whereas Turner, you know, this organization we've seen in the past, they like flexibility. They like guys that aren't strictly just a DH. I mean, even Brandon Belt last year played a bunch of first base. He at least had that option. And Justin Turner, as you mentioned, can play third in a pinch, can play second, can play first, and will primarily be the DH. So, you know, in hindsight, it was pretty obvious that he was likely going to be someone they were going to target. And by all the sounds of it, I mean, he's a guy that they've targeted in the past as well. I mean, they tried to bring him last offseason before he signed with the Boston Red Sox. They at least kind of chatted with him, and they've always kind of had an interest in him. And it's totally understandable why, as you pointed out, he's a guy that has won a lot as a member of the LA Dodgers. And, you know, it's kind of a throwback, right, to when I was a kid, and I'm sure when you were as well. And, you know, you always heard stories about the good old veteran presence and guys that can come in and, you know, have that winning experience and can spread their fairy magic to the rest of the ball club that hasn't been able to get over the hump. You know, you think of back in the day, whether it's, you know, guys like, I know at the time maybe they hadn't won at all, but like a Dave Winfield or Paul Mullett or, you know, Jack Morris, Dave Stewart, like those are the guys I think a lot of people in this city and Blue Jays fans think a lot about when they kind of think of someone in a Justin Turner mold, sort of that veteran guy that can come in and be a piece that hopefully can get the team over the hump. Now, the Molitors and the Winfields, I mean, those guys were exceptional. And I don't think that Justin Turner is going to get to those types of levels because those guys were still pretty incredible at their advanced ages. But if, you know, you look at recent comparisons, I would say, you know, Steve Pearce for a couple of years here in Toronto, not even a couple of years, for like a season and a bit. If Justin Turner is that version of Steve Pearce, I think it's a win. If he's Curtis Granderson from a couple of years ago, I think that's a win, right? Like, that's sort of the mold that I'm looking at, a couple of guys that can come in and just swing a good bat. And hopefully that ends up being a big difference come, you know, playoff time. We know how much they struggled, of course, with runners in scoring position. And that is something that Turner has been very adept at over the years and even dating back to last season. So, you know, like I said, as the weeks go on here, whether it's, you know, the writing, the articles that come out, or the radio hits or what have you, people talking about what this guy brings to the table, it's hard not to at least sort of feel that optimism. And whether you buy the narratives or not, it's hard not to get caught up in all of it.
Yeah, no, I agree fully. And, you know, Turner is going to get the comp to Brandon Belt. I think that's going to be, it's very easy and reductive, but also very easy line to draw back to the 858 OPS, the 19 home runs we saw from Brandon Belt last year. It's not crazy to have a similar thing from Justin Turner. Last year, we take a look at it. He was 276, 345, 455, 23 home runs, a 114 WRC plus, 17.5 K rate, 8 walk rate. And then, of course, it's been fun to go through these guys who played last year and correlate the runs created plus of the OPS to the actual the Fangraphs and BR measures of war. 1.2 wins for Fangraphs, 2.1, obviously taking a hefty cut of the tax of playing DH a lot. Some of the strengths: 91st percentile whiff, didn't swing in myself a whole ton, 77th percentile strikeout rate, and first percentile, about as bad as it gets, base running. But so it goes. you mentioned it very nicely there. The runners in scoring position last year was a real problem. He's a 943 OPS last year. Runners in scoring position, that's about as good as you can possibly ask. In terms of things that he saw last year, he really punished breaking stuff. He was big time value against sinkers and changeups and curveballs and sweepers. Got beat up a little bit by fastballs, but did have a 900 OPS against left-handed pitching as well. So there's some really nice splits to fit into what they need. And the games you mentioned, he could play a little first base, could play a little third base. 98 games at DH last year, 41 at first, 7 at third, 10 games, 4 starts at second. And in terms of the top line skill, just elite swing, take, decision making. A guy that knows how to battle, knows how to have big at bats, knows situational hitting. And I know that's something that, you know, there's been a long time war about. Is that a skill? Is that a luck factor? I think it sort of lies somewhere in the middle, but he is a guy that has been known to know how to lock in and doesn't give at bats away. When you think about, or even look back at Justin Turner's 2023, I know 114 WRC plus is maybe a little lofty. None of the projections have him quite hitting that. Does it seem like that's the last great Justin Turner year to you, or is that, you know, you're able to believe that he can replicate a good amount of that?
Yeah, I think it's sort of where the risk lies is, you know, the Blue Jays have their own projection systems and, you know, they have a sense of what this guy could produce on the field. And look, these projection systems are much smarter than I am. And I don't want to say that they're smarter than you. Maybe you've got your own Zoobs.
Buddy, they are smarter than me.
They Zoobs are smarter for than me. 650 or something you got going on there. Z-War. I don't know what you've got cooking in the lab. But, you know, I think one thing that you pointed out there kind of worries me a little bit. And it's the struggles against the four-seamer. -7 run value. He was not great against four-seamers last season. And that was the pitch that he and everybody in baseball sees the most. And I was looking just on Baseball Savant, his ex-WOBA against the four-seamer was 346 last year, and that was kind of in the same range as a Matt Chapman and an Alejandro Kirk and Kevin Biggio. And we know, you know, from time to time how much those guys struggle with the four-seamers. But you hope because of all the other things that he can do at the plate. I mean, he's got a great eye, as you mentioned, the elite swinging and take measures. He's a guy that can punish lefties. He's a guy that can put the ball in play because he doesn't strike out a ton. You know, you're going to hope that those things can kind of make up for the downside that maybe he sees when it comes to four-seam fastballs up in the zone. I think we've even kind of seen that a little bit here in spring training. I know you don't want to take too much of that, but there's been times, you know, watching these games where it seems like he's been getting beat by the heater a bit. But, you know, it's coming down to all the other stuff. They're hitting with runners in scoring position. you know, as you said, when it comes to clutch and things like that, it's always hard to quantify how much of it is real. I mean, you even look at Matt Chapman last year, but he talks about how horrendous he was with runners in scoring position, and he was. But the year before that, he was pretty good. So did he all of a sudden just forget how to hit with runners in scoring position? Was there some poor luck involved? Was there just some other stuff going on? You know, absolutely. It's hard to go season to season and say that this is the reason why they weren't able to hit with runners in scoring position. But I do think there's a factor of, you know, Justin Turner has done it on the highest levels in the biggest games. He's not going to be too concerned having to go up against, you know, Emmanuel Clase in the ninth inning in a game in June. Like, that's just not going to phase this guy because he's been there and done it in the biggest stage in October. So the Blue Jays obviously feel like he can provide that. And I think that's going to be a big thing because as it stands right now, he's projected to be in the cleanup spot. You would think he's going to have a lot of runners on in front of him, whether it's Bo, Springer, or Vladdy, and he's going to get a lot of opportunities here. So, you know, we go back a season ago and Dalton Varsho was the cleanup hitter at the start of the year, and that didn't last long. And you hope that's not the case again this year with Justin Turner. But when it comes to the projections, as you said, they're not super lofty, but you go back to last year for Brandon Belt as well. And I know he was coming off some injury, but I believe he was sort of projected by Steamer and such sort of in that 110 range as well. And he went on to have a 138 WRC plus. So a lot of good luck involved there, but just, you know, again, projections are projections and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But most of the time they kind of give you a sense of what, you know, could be happening as far as, you know, 70th percentile outcomes.
Yeah, and you mentioned the whisperings of Belt coming off an injury plagued year. There was also quite a bit of talk. I remember when the signing happened that he was Turner was playing through a pretty devastating foot injury last year and was like struggling to walk, colloquially from some reporters out of Boston, just sort of saying like using it as evidence of what a gamer the guy is to refusing to take games off for a Boston team that didn't accomplish much in a year where. There wasn't much reason to play through big injury, but a foot injury apparently did hamper him quite a bit. And you can see the numbers. It's not drastic. He loses 60 points of OPS in the back half of the year and 42 points off the on base. I think he gets maybe getting attacked a little bit more with that fastball after losing a bit with the foot. You mentioned the projections. We will talk about them. I've said many times there's the number one good thing you can do with projections is ignore them. The second best thing you can do is amalgamate them. So we'll take a look, try to look at all of them and just sort of see where they have them projected, between the bat, Steamer and Zips. Low end, is a 247, 315, 394. High end is a 260, 337, 412, somewhere between 14 and 17 home runs, a WRC plus between 97 and 107, and wins above replacement. Really depends on where you're playing him. If he plays third at a decent rate or plays first at a decent rate, I think you're going to see something. You could talk into a two-win year if he DHs a lot and is low as bat has him. As low as 0.7 WAR, which some of the Buffalo guys got done in a part of a season. The headline here to me is that they have the power falling off, not quite a bit, but 23 home runs the year before, 17 this year. You know, it was a weirdly restrictive stadium last season. I think Rogers Center might open up a little bit next year, but how do the numbers of that hit you? Sort of a 107. 17 home run, 330-ish on base. Does that seem right to you? Maybe a little, are you a little rosier? Are you a little less? What's your sort of feeling in terms of what those things tell you?
Yeah, I mean, I think just based on what we've seen from him over the last couple of years, he's sort of aging gracefully and in a slow but steady decline. You know, going back from 2020, it was a 138 WRC plus, and 2021, 126, 2022, 124, and then last year with Boston, 114. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense that if you start going down the curve a little bit, that he's going to drop off. I know, I think around the time of the signing, our buddy Nick Ashbourn wrote a piece for Sportsnet talking about batters that have taken at least 400 plate appearances at the age of 39 or older. And I mean, it's a long list of Hall of Famers. And I mean, Justin Turner has had an incredible career. But as you know, we've seen, Father Time comes for all. And, you know, there is some risk here. And it is a little bit frightening that, you know, a lot of those guys really struggled. Some of the greats of the game really struggled in the latter stages of their 30s. So that kind of gets to what I was saying earlier about the risk here, that it doesn't come without any, that it's possible he's cooked. I mean, we see it all the time. You know, I think of like a Nelson Cruz who was on the gas. So maybe he just ran out of fuel, pardon the pun. But, you know, Justin Turner, you just hope that what he can do as far as being able to put the bat on the ball, and maybe the swing speed isn't what it used to be. Maybe the power isn't what it used to be. But if you can touch grass and you can hit some line drives and put the ball in play with runners on base, I mean, I don't think the Blue Jays are expecting him to replicate the 138 from Brandon Bell last year. I think that would be like a 95th percentile outcome, because it definitely was for a guy like Brandon Bell. But, you know, if he's 110, I think you take it, because it's pretty clear that the Blue Jays are not only betting on what he's doing on the field, but they've made it pretty clear that they like what he can do off the field.
How would you frame you get a lot of mentions. People love to reply to you, and for good reason. You talk ball on Twitter, and it's a very good resource. And you're somebody that you had a good run as the one of the two hosts of Jay's Talk post game. What's your feeling on the discourse around Justin Turner right now? How are fans feeling? I get a bit of a sense of that's it is sort of the vibe. People are like, we thought we were getting Ohtani, and we got a 39-year-old. We got a guy who's almost 40. That's the big move. I think that is the majority of it. There's a little bit of the people that I think are feeling like they got a guy who plays the right way and does the right things. And for a team that 2 years in a row now making the playoffs had mental mistakes cost them more than anything in both of those appearances, maybe he's a guy that is a whip into shape, steady hand sort of thing. But I get it as most people are like, I can't believe this is the big move this offseason. That align with what you think people are thinking maybe to start with, or if that's changed now?
Yeah, I think initially that was for a lot of people. I mean, throughout the offseason, I had kept tweeting that, you know, if it was up to me, if I'm Ross Atkins, I'm looking, you know, to swing big. And, you know, I'm hoping for a JD Martinez as just a strictly DH type, because I think he has, you know, one of the biggest upsides out of all the free agents that were remaining at the time. You know, I would have been cool with a Jorge Soler, because that guy can hit a lot of bombs, and power, as we know, was something that the Blue Jays struggled with last season. But I always threw Turner in there as kind of, you know, a fallback option, because he did fit sort of what the Blue Jays were looking for, as we spoke about. And I think when he signed that a lot of people were in that camp that you mentioned. It was, that's it. Like, this is the guy. Like, you know, JD Martinez is still out there. Cody Bellinger is still out there. Matt Chapman, you know, he's still out there. And this is where you spend the money on a guy who is in decline. Sure, he's done a lot of great things, but, you know, this is your big move, your big impact move of the offseason. But since then, I think some people have started to come around a little bit. You know, I think because of the narratives about, you know, Justin Turner, and he's the guy that's the first one at the ballpark and the last one to leave. And he's always around the cages, and he's talking to the young guys, and, you know, getting their thoughts on their swing decisions and all that stuff. And I'm not saying it sarcastically, saying that it doesn't, you know, matter, of course. But I think, you know, the more that we've seen him play and some of the at-bats that he's taken. And I think, you know, when he steps on that field in Tampa Bay come April, and he drives a ball into the gap and brings someone home, the fan base is going to be unanimously behind Justin Turner. Like, that's how it always is. You even go back to last year, how many people wanted to get rid of Brandon Belt at the end of April? It's like, this guy's got to go. DFA, he's cooked. And from May on, he was the most important, or if not the most important, one of the most important players on that team. And they probably don't make it to the playoffs without Brandon Belt's bat. And it felt for a long time there that he was one of the only guys you felt great about at the plate when, you know, runners were on or they needed a big hit. So, you know, we see it all the time. No matter what people think about a signing in the offseason, once that player steps on the field and starts giving positive contributions, for the most part, people, you know, get on board. And, you know, I've heard that from some people that, you know, Justin Turner, you know, people are going to fall in love with this guy. Like, I just think it's pretty obvious. He's a very likable character. He's a fun guy in the media, and he can still play a little bit. This is not a case where, you know, we were talking before about the risk. I don't think he's cooked. I think that's a bit of a stretch. You know, I think there's going to be some decline here, but he's going to have some big moments this season. I feel pretty confident in that.
He's got a really nice swing too. He's got a really nice right-handed swing. I agree totally with you. I think you made some great points there. One that I would add, that it reminds me a little bit of my thoughts and feelings around Kevin Kiermaier. I remember when Kiermaier signed last year, it was like, oh man, I'm gonna have to cheer for Kevin Kiermaier. And then I was like, oh, Kevin Kiermaier's been hurt and he's been sort of bad. And then game one, he makes the catch, and you're like, oh yeah, it fucking rocks to have Kevin Giermeier. Like, oh right. And I think similarly with Turner, I was like, man, 39 years old, a Red Sox, a Dodger, a real like rat sort of guy when he's not on your team. And then you see him in spring, and it's like he looks great in the jersey. He says and does all the right things, and he's got a sweet right-handed swing. I think he is prime for that exact slot that you described there. Speaking of comps, open-ended question. You can take it however you want. Is there a comp that you can make to Justin Turner? Does it remind you of anybody, either stylistically, vibey, look, feel, numbers? Is there a forced comp you can get on board with?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of threw out earlier, just from a statistical standpoint, like, you know, Steve Pierce when he was a Blue Jay, like sort of that guy that doesn't strike out a ton, you know, walks a little bit, you know, crushes lefties, a guy that can, you know, swing it, of course. You know, the one season before Steve Pierce got traded to the Red Sox and became World Series MVP, I think he was around a 138 clip as well, WRC plus for the Blue Jays. And, yes, you know, if Justin Turner does that, that's amazing. But, you know, it's interesting. He's sort of one of a kind. Like, looking at the baseball savant, I think like Will Smith, his former Dodgers teammate, was like the comp as far as batted ball profile. And they have sort of similar swings. They, you know, got that big leg kick and they swing it from the right side. But I mean, just from the look and sort of the things that he does at the plate, like, there aren't a ton of Justin Turners. And I think that's partly why the Blue Jays wanted to get him, because, you know, he's a special breed. And, you know, I think the glasses are so weird to me. Like, why do they have to be so large? Like, they're extra large. They almost look like goggles. Like, I didn't know they make lenses on sunglasses that big. It's kind of ridiculous. But that's part of the look. And the beard is really cool. It's odd looking at pictures of Justin Turner when he was really young, like, yeah, when he was first coming up in the major leagues as like a New York Met, or even go back to when he was a Baltimore Oriole, and it's like, who is this person? Like, just don't recognize him at all. But since he grew out the beard, since he went to the Dodgers and figured everything out with his swing, I mean, he's been one of the most consistent players in the game, and just he's a lot of fun to watch, and I'm really excited. You know, when the lights get bright this season, as I said, he's going to have some big moments, I think, and he's going to be one of those guys, whether it's a one-year wonder or maybe he finds his way back here next year. I think, you know, people are going to remember this season for him. I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I took this not with playing style. I took it with a sort of arrival on the Jays in age and timing. I have this. My comp here was 2007 Frank Thomas, who was like with one team for a very long time, then did 1 year in Oakland. It was like, huh, he's still very good, but it's not the White Sox. It's a different. It looked weird to have him there, and then quickly, next thing you know, he's a Blue Jay. I feel a similar 9 years with the Dodgers. All of a sudden, he's a Red Sox. All of a sudden, he's a Blue Jay at age 39. Obviously, he's not Frank Thomas, but you look at a similar run of production where it's a big chunk of years where he's above average as a hitter and then comes in, it's declining, but you're still hoping you get the 125 OPS plus that Frank Thomas put up in 2007. That brings us to the 2024 outlook. We talked a lot about projections. We talked a lot about, you know, last year, this year, the aging curve, the risk. What do you see for Justin Turner this year? How much do you think he'll play in the field, for one, and then what do you sort of think for in terms of offensive contribution to the team and an overall contribution to the team?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how much he actually plays in the field. I mean, the Blue Jays have a ton of you know, glut in the infield. You know, whether it's IKF, who's going to be playing all over the place. You know, we'll see what happens with Santiago Espinal if he's here at the start of the season. I mean, Ernie Clements making a big push here to get some time in the field, having a nice spring. So, you know, at the age of 39 and coming off the injuries, as you mentioned last year, that he dealt with, it feels like the Blue Jays want to keep him off his feet as much as possible, because, again, I mean, they didn't sign this guy to peak in June. They signed this guy so that he's helping them later in the season and hopefully come October. And you want the healthiest Justin Turner as possible. So I think he played around, you know, 50 or so games in the field last year at first, second, and third base. And I wonder if there's going to be a little bit less of that, because they do have some options that can be out there. But if he's swinging it, I mean, it's going to be hard to keep his bat out of the lineup, because, you know, you go beyond the top four that they have. And if you want to throw in bounce back years from Alejandro Kirk, and you throw in the contribution from Danny Jansen, you know, the lineup gets a little bit thin after that. I mean, depending on what you think Dalton Varsho is going to be able to do this year, Kevin Kiermaier, and then, you know, an IKF if he's out there every day. You want to make sure you have as many thumpers in there as possible. And Justin Turner is going to have to be, you know, one of those core four or five guys in the middle of the lineup there that hopefully can provide some offense. So, you know, getting back to what we said earlier about the projections, I'm kind of in line, you know, with that. I think, you know, anything above, you know, 120 WRC plus would be phenomenal. But I'm not expecting that. If he's around what he was last year, around 110, it's kind of what I'm expecting. So I think he's going to have some, you know, flash months like he did a season ago with the Red Sox. But I'd be lying if I didn't think at some point he's probably going to be dealing with some sort of nagging injury, as everyone tends to do, and maybe the numbers drop off. But I think, you know, come the end of the season, when we look at the numbers on the whole, the regular season, you're going to see a productive hitter, a guy that's going to drive in some runs. And I think he's going to be solid, but probably not spectacular.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. That about lines up with me as well. I think we're going to see him. It'll be interesting. You mentioned the glut of DHs. It'll be interesting to see if Vogelbach is on the team, where that lays out. Does he end up being a little bit more of a third baseman when you're trying to get as many hitters as you possibly can in there? And you're going Turner at third and Vlad at first and Vogelbach DHing, or are you not bringing Vogelbach with you? Or it's going to be very interesting to see how that breaks out. Bigger picture, I think there's not a lot beyond 2024 to even talk about with Justin Turner. He's here to win this year. Maybe it goes great and he comes back for his age 40 year, but for all intents and purposes, this is it for Justin Turner.
Yeah, this is the last ride potentially for Justin Turner, and then maybe he still has a little bit left in the tank depending on what happens this year. But you know, he's had a phenomenal career, and the guy has won mostly in one place, but he's a guy that brings that pedigree to this team. And as we said before, we'll see what kind of an impact that he can have off the field, because you just know it. I mean, it's already started in spring training, the articles and everything coming out about him talking to the younger guys and hanging around in the cage. And not that I hate that stuff. I love hearing about that stuff. I mean, we all want to believe in the narrative. I mean, the whole you know, guy brings the winning pedigree. It's right up there with some of our favorite narratives in sports, not even just in baseball. But yeah, I think looking beyond the season, I don't even think Justin Turner's looking beyond this season. He's here to try to win now with this Blue Jays team, and hopefully he can lead them to not even the promised land, just a first round win. Just get a win in general. Like, just one win. That's all everybody's asking for this year, I think, with the Blue Jays.
How did we get here? Oh, my goodness. you're absolutely right. And you were right to point out a great litany of this kind of guy, Winfield, Molitor. There was always one guy on the Jays roster that they went and got the veteran to show the way and push
Russ
them.
Martin.
Push them over. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. Great, great calls. Rob, that is it. That's all I need from you today. Thank you so much, man. You can find Rob's work at Post Media. Yes.
Yes, sir.
He's the sports digital editor over at Post Media. And Rob Wong, 34, on Twitter to get the thoughts on baseball, a little bit of hockey, a little bit of, you talk about all kinds of stuff on there, don't you?
Wrestling.
And wrestling. That's right. That's one for another day. We'll get into the wrestling brain depths another day. Rob, man, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate your insights.
No problem, pal. Thanks.
Thank you. As always, if you're looking for more 40 and 30 profiles from every player on the darn team as we approach opening day, it is inside of 2 weeks away. You know where to find them. Patreon.com/lessthanJays, the $9 tier, gets you every single player profile, a bunch of ones you won't have heard on this feed. Did you hear Kevin Kiermaier on this feed? You did not. Did you hear Kiner Falefa or Biggio or Espinal? You did not. Did you hear Richards, Garcia, Green, Meza, Cabrera, White, Francis, Pearson, Horwitz, Barger, Zulueta, Parsons, Little, Danner, Jimenez, Clement, and Lucas? You did not. And if you want to hear all these guest episodes that you're hearing on the main feed early, you can also find those on the Patreon at Less Than Jays. Lots and lots and lots of goodies in there. Also did some extended thoughts on the Votto signing. When Jake and I do regular main feed episodes, an extended version of those episodes goes up on that feed at the $5 and $9 tiers. Lots of extra stuff. Standing room only, which is just me standing here in my recording studio on my feet, giving you extra content. That goes on the $9 feed. All kinds of extra stuff to make it worth your time and attention, which we greatly appreciate. That's enough plugs. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We got so much to come next week. I have banked so many episodes because I'm away Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that means guest episodes Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So much good stuff still to come, and so many good players still to come on 40 and 30. You can find it all right here. Thank you so much, as always, for being a part of Less Than Jays.